Molly Carney is an 80-something great-grandmother, highly involved in helping her granddaughters bring up their own children. She's also a wealthy widow of a famous artist. When her health begins to fail and her thoughts turn to changing her will, an already fractious family begins to tear itself apart. And Unraveling is the second novel from Elska Rattle. And Elska is with me in studio. Now, I said to you just before we came to air, Elska, this is a lovely family you found for yourself. How would you explain the character? Now, there's four generations of them, so they're not all exactly the same. But the one thing they do like is their money.
Well, I'll go through them. Then I'll get back to that. One thing they like is their money. So there's Molly.
Yeah, who's the matriarch, if you like. Yeah.
And then there are her three daughters. So Aoife is aptly called.
Who really likes her money.
Who's the eldest. Mm. And then...
Lily.
Eileen is the youngest, yeah. Who I don't know how to explain her except through psychoanalytical terms. It's just a narcissist.
And having a difficult time. You could say she has narcissism, I suppose, might be judgmental in some ways. She's having certain mental health issues. There's no question about that. She's going through difficulties.
That's true.
I'm being fairer to her than you,
clearly.
You are
being fairer than I am, yeah.
And Sinead, who's the middle?
And Sinead is in the middle, who has no children, whereas Eileen has two girls. And Aoife has one.
Then another generation.
Eileen's children, Cara and Freya. Cara has three children, another on the way, and Freya is a single mother of a little boy who's the eldest grandchild.
Yeah. So we have
great grandchild.
We have four generations.
And four generations, all women.
And only one boy in the midst of it all.
So it's really about what happens when Molly decides to change her will and give everything to her grandchildren. Aoife does love her money, but it's not about that particularly, I think.
I suppose the reason I would say something like they like their money, they're lucky enough to be in a very privileged position because of the success of Molly's husband.
He was a very
successful artist, and the entire family are kind of still living off the fruits of his earnings.
Certainly, yeah. And it is dwindling as it goes down the generations.
Yeah, it doesn't
last forever.
And
certainly their whole identities are built by his achievements. But really, I suppose I'm only using this changing of the will and this sort of squabbling over the will, manipulating over the will, as a way of showing the trauma in the family.
Right.
You know,
I don't know what you want to give away in terms of that trauma. How far back does that trauma go? Can we talk about other members, Molly's other child?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it probably goes, there are hints that it goes back further than that. Molly lost her first child, a little boy. And I suppose what I wanted to do was trace how that very ordinary trauma actually, you know, across this happens across the world.
And given that Molly is in her 80s and we're pretty much in a contemporary world, you know, mortality rates in infants
here, it's
you know, 50, 60 years ago would have been different than they are now.
And even in Ireland as opposed to other places and further back. You know, I mean, it's part of nature, I suppose.
Yes.
But I wanted to show how that sort of blameless trauma, where it's no one's fault, is passed down through the generations. And I think particularly with Aoife, who, you know, people stop me at when I'm on a panel or things like that and put up their hands and say, I really hope she's something to redeem her because but actually I'm hoping to look at why she is that way and what it is never feeling good enough. It's jealousy, it's rage, it's all these things that get set in infancy for her.
Because in fact, Molly and her husband, who's now dead, the husband, he was firmly of the opinion that the three daughters, not just Aoife, but the three daughters were spoiled by the fact that the father was so successful and that they had so much money. So they never really had to get out and do their own thing.
Yeah, and I think there are hints particularly for Eileen that that's...
Yeah, who's the youngest.
Yeah,
the one.
That's maybe part of what's happened with her. And Sinead's in this terrible stasis. You know, she's never had to do anything. She went from a father to a husband and, you know, inherited a house from that side. And, you know, he was also a very difficult man, though.
The father.
Yeah. So even though he would consider them spoiled, they also had to deal with his rages. They had to deal with the knowledge, I think, because I think children know more than is verbally communicated as well. The knowledge that their mother really had to work very, very hard to keep things happy.
Yeah, to keep,
things
keep
together. And she had to sacrifice a lot.
Yeah,
she,
and it's one of the things, one of the ways that you tell the story is through the eyes of practically all of the characters, I think.
Yeah.
Now, you're not giving first-person narratives to them, but you do, we see that maybe a part of the tale from the point of view of one of the three daughters or some of the grandchildren, or indeed even the great-grandchildren, the very young, even Peg, who's the youngest
tiny,
of them all, his tiny little baby. You
managed
to give her a little section of her own as well. I'm wondering to what extent does, you know, you had worked as an actor previous to this. To what extent does your facility maybe as an actor to empathise or to portray a character, did that feed into the writing of this book in that way?
I think so. I mean, I think it feeds into all my writing in a way. That's what I do when I write, is I try to think my way entirely into a different character.
As if it was a character you were
going
to play on stage.
You know, which is very different, you know, especially now there's autofiction and that's kind of quite popular, isn't it? And it is, there is a kind of wave of that kind of writing, and it's not the kind of writing I've ever really done. I've always sort of wanted, what's interesting to me is entering into a different mindset completely and also looking at a story from all the different narratives that are happening. So for this book, I was thinking, is he going to ask me if it, you know, what's the true story? Or
Well, then I'll ask.
I thought no, I won't answer that. I'll avoid that question by
telling me,
saying that they're all different stories.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
And
Aoife's head, she's not the bad guy at all. She's terribly wronged, and you know, no one can see what awful little brats her nieces are, and she finally gets some justice. You know, by I won't give away the ending. By punishing the person she thinks needs to be punished.
And yet, the nieces, who are the great-grandchildren of the aforementioned Molly, the nieces kind of feel, well, they've had their own difficulties with their mother, who's Eileen, who's had these, you know, the father's absent, basically. They were the product of an affair she had with the same two children, an affair with a married man, a conductor. They probably feel justified in saying, well, somebody needs to take care of us. The grandparents effectively brought them up, not their mother.
Oh, definitely, yeah. And I don't think they think there'd be anything wrong with taking the will the way it was written.
Planned by Molly.
Yeah, whereas Aoife would see it that they'd manipulated her. And I suppose Aoife sees it as her birthright. And the girls kind of see it as, well, whatever Granny wants.
Yes.
You know, which suits them. Fine.
Well, I suppose if you're getting the money,
yeah, exactly.
I think, if that's what Granny wants, then let's go with
so,
that. But I'm interested, you keep, no, not me, I'm not sending you in that direction, you keep coming back to the character of Aoife. I thought Molly would be would possibly have been your starting
point. She is my focus. It's
but
only
did
because
take
in
over,
my head,
kind of,
because people's response to poor old Aoife has been so awful, because I felt very sad for her writing that character, you know, because I felt she was the one who became the most bitter and had the least going for her. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
She had no imaginative or creative life or anything but money and being Dennis Kearney's daughter and keeping up appearances.
And
so
she's in a successful marriage, though, isn't she? You know, financially successful.
Financially
at any
successful. Yeah. But in terms of any kind of tenderness.
There's not much on the emotional side of
things. Authentic in her life, really.
Yeah.
You know? And yet people responded very badly to poor Aoife.
Yeah. But going down the... So Aoife is that daughter of the...
She's the eldest daughter of Molly,
But going down the generations then, and I'm going to the granddaughters now, Cara and Freya, isn't it? Yeah, Cara and Freya. Cara, it struck me, there's kind of little elements of Aoife in her as well, in that Cara finds...
I'm so glad you say that.
Well, the scene that really struck me was with her husband. She's married and she has the three children, isn't it? Yes.
Three, yeah.
And there they are. They invite a couple over for dinner and they're trying so hard to impress them. So that there's clearly this terrible need to be accepted.
That's brilliant. Yeah. But that exactly, that sudden need, even though she would not ever... admit that. But when the
would she know it? Do you think?
No, that's the whole idea. So, but when this occasion arises, she suddenly really, really, really wants to impress, and she really wants to be correct, and she's not. She's wrong. You know, she's.
But that brings us back then to that overarching theme that you said at the very beginning, this idea of the problems of generations just passing down from one generation to the next, which is quite a bleak outlook if we don't try to break that cycle.
If we don't, address it, So, I mean, I hope that I have a lot of faith in the children of this book. I think they...
The great-grandchildren. Yeah,
I think they are going to tackle this and... deal with it. And I think that Molly's left enough love there that they are strong, you know, and that it can end here, kind of thing.
And then to go to the question that you didn't want me to ask you, but since you've asked, since you've mentioned it, I will go there. It is this idea of memory. It's not that what is a true story. That you're kind of saying whoever you are in any of these cases, you see it from your point of view. You don't necessarily see how other people see it.
Yeah.
So it's not that they're different stories, they're just different points of view.
Different points of view in it and different... Yeah, but in that sense that you don't know... Like you were saying, does Cara know that she wants to keep up appearances? How like her dreaded aunt she is? Mm. No, she doesn't. So you don't even necessarily know your motivations. You don't necessarily know what you think. So she thinks she's a very innocent character in all of this, whereas Aoife thinks she's a...
They all think they're innocent.
Manipulative,
really.
Money hungry. And maybe she's a little bit as well. Do you know what I mean? So what is the truth?
Just one final thing on it. It's a big family saga. And I mean, even I know for me, getting my head around those four generations, I said, you really have to get those clear in your head before you can talk about the book in some ways. How big a task was it for you in the writing? Was it a very long write?
Yeah. So it was Molly's story initially. And then there was a big break when I was sick during pregnancy and I did short stories because I couldn't consistently work on it. And then the other characters came in and I didn't even want to do the children's voices originally, and I was told not to by everybody. But I just needed them in there. Yeah, I really did, because they're really important. Even if we just hear a little snippet of them, just to remember that they're actually the people we're passing all this down on to, you know,
And consistently, they are the ones who've been in reviews that I've read who have been praised for
your ability. Yeah, funnily, it's
did,
funny.
Did
isn't
you know
it?
That? Did you feel that affinity of writing younger voices when you were writing them, even though it's not a first person narrative?
I didn't even think of it that way, to be completely honest. I just knew the characters because I knew them through writing their mother and wanted to give them a voice. It wasn't, I didn't think of writing children
per se.
I did have to when I was writing. Go, okay, well, hang on. Where's her language at?
She's only a baby.
She's a little bit deaf, how she talks. You know, but...
Well, we'll see now where you go, if you're going to continue with the Carney family and maybe give us the fourth generation as the basis of the next book. That's Elska Rattle speaking to us about her current novel, An Unravelling, which is published by Head of Zeus.